Returning to our examination of the administration of welfare relief in Grand Rapids and Itasca County, let's begin with a summary of what we have so far determined. Relief was first entirely in the hands of the county commissioners, each of whom directly granted money to those who had applied. So it was totally their decision as to whether it was deserving or not. And it was a very unfair system. Some of the commissioners were generous, other ones were penny pinchers, so determined that the county wouldn't spend money. And without any proper vetting process, it just was not a good system. But it lasted for quite a while, and it wasn't until 1916 that an imaginative change was put in place. And this placed all welfare in the hands of a new poor and hospital commission. Only three other counties in the state had anything similar to this. But it used the same procedures as the county commissioners had done. The members of the new Poor and Hospital Commission were each responsible for giving aid, and they carried their books with them and could simply grant it right on the spot. So there still was not a good vetting process, and there still was not a practical system behind it. And then there was that remarkable decision that was made to bring Lydia Buckness, a social worker in Philadelphia, to Grand Rapids to fix the problems. And whatever motivated her to leave her eastern big city background and come to Grand Rapids, don't know. But she did, and it didn't work. Don't know if it was a problem on her part that she was not doing what the commissioners wanted, or if it was on their part that they weren't adequately following what she was recommending. But at any rate, she was only here for a year and left. So in 1929, on the eve of the Great Depression, we still have the same system in order as what we had before. And we now, of course, are soon going to be approaching greatly multiplied requests for financial help and aid. Well, the duties of those new hospital and poor commissioners certainly called for considerable time and energy. It wasn't their fault that the system itself was not working well. Some of the appointed commissioners found the demands overwhelming and resigned before their terms had expired. Others faithfully fulfilled their responsibilities for extended periods of time. A Herald Review editorial in 1929 offered sympathy to the board members who serve without pay and spend their time listening to sad tales and give what relief they can. But in that same year, the newspaper also sharply suggested that better verification for aid claims was needed and that more effort should be expended to find relatives who could help the indigent. In 1931, new state legislation was passed in an attempt to alleviate some of the difficulties the Itasca Poor and Hospital Board was encountering in dealing with state guidelines. The major result of the legislation, though, actually placed even heavier demands on the commissioners. But the legislation did clarify both their powers and the responsibilities relative to state mandates and practices. Once again, the need for a paid full-time investigator was imperative. Now we begin to make some real progress here. In 1931, A.K. Secklinger was hired by the board for a salary of $100 per month, 8 cents per mile for travel, and reimbursement for meals while out of town. The commissioners turned their order books and relief lists over to Secklinger, and all new requests for aid went directly to the new investigator. He was not professionally trained as a welfare worker, but he had served for 8 years as a representative for the disabled American veterans. From the very beginning, Secklinger worked cooperatively with the poor and hospital commissioners. He was regarded as fair and honest intellectually and morally, thoroughly loyal to his principles, but skillful at avoiding pressure even while effectively working with others. He easily assumed a leadership role, and for the first time, direct relief aid in Itasca County was brought under practical control. Secklinger managed to establish a better organization for the distribution of welfare, even as he faced many problems. The impact of the Depression was more keenly felt, and the applications for relief were increasing dramatically. While dealing with that increase, Secklinger also found it necessary to turn his attention and time to the management and the future of the county poor farm. That unfortunate institution, a relic of the days of Queen Elizabeth, as one observer called it, had posed dilemmas continuously for first the county commissioners and then for the Poor and Hospital Board. In the 1920s, generally about 80 inhabitants were at the farm. Because of the Depression, the place became more crowded in the 30s. The Herald Review sent a reporter there once, and the main thing that really struck him as he looked at it was the hallways of the main building were crowded with cots. There wasn't enough room in the structure for all of the new people who were being sent there. When Itasca County elderly citizens without any local relatives to care for them needed help, the practice was to move them to the poor farm. If the individual owned property, it was sold, and the proceeds were turned over to the county. Once a person was on the farm, difficult to obtain permission from the superintendent was required to leave the grounds. The place was a kind of prison. Resentment toward such treatment was keen, especially on the part of those whose property had been sold. Furthermore, although this was supposed to be a retirement place, work was assigned to the inmates, and they were expected to complete it. Then, when an inmate died, any personal effects, such as watches, were sold for the benefit of the county. Efforts on the part of some to leave belongings to friends or relatives were thwarted. Those sent there who had owned property regarded themselves as above those who had been indigent when committed. Regardless, the rules were the same for all. No, the poor farm was not a happy place. The county had erected various buildings there over the years and had improved the land. Nonetheless, in the 1930s, the poor farm did not meet state standards. Secklinger and the poor and hospital commissioners were subject to considerable pressure from the State Board of Control to improve the facility and especially to construct a new fireproof main residence building. With requests for direct aid increasing and unhappy taxpayers keeping an eagle eye on welfare funds, such major improvements were simply not possible. Minor fixing and remodeling was done, and the place continued on, satisfying neither the residents, nor the county, nor the state. It was only after several more years of uncertainty that, under Secklinger's direction, the poor farm was made an adjunct to the county hospital. Now, rather than being a quasi-jail, it became a home for the old and infirm, with medical and nursing care provided. So that was a major problem that was solved there, and once that was done, Secklinger and the commissioners could deal more fully with the greatest demands for relief aid that the county had ever encountered. Having brought some order to the meshing of state and county aid relief, Secklinger faced a complex new dimension as the Depression forced the federal government to enter the welfare picture. As had been the case with the state, the Itasca County Poor and Hospital Commission did not fit into new federal relief procedures, which were primarily designed for counties without such agencies. Following federal guidelines, an Emergency Relief Committee was established in Itasca County. The committee shared members with and worked closely with both the county commissioners and the poor and hospital commissioners. Nonetheless, a new and confusing dimension was added to Secklinger's organizational framework. Very little planning had been done at the national or state or local level for the distribution of federal aid. In Itasca County, as elsewhere, the prime concern was to spend the federal dollars quickly before they might be lost to other places. The Emergency Relief Committee began its work by establishing a list of destitute families and individuals in each village and township of the county. Although the list was submitted to the Poor and Hospital Commission for routine certification, the Emergency Relief Committee, without formal investigation, which they had no manpower to do, could also certify any case of need simply by agreement of the members of the committee. Thus, funds were soon being paid out based on procedures that were quite at variance with those that Secklinger had established. Nevertheless, the influx of federal money, on a whole, certainly aided the poor of Itasca County, and relations between the relief committee, the county commissioners, and the poor and hospital commissioners, even if sometimes strained, remained on a cordial basis. The poor and hospital commission still theoretically in full control of relief aid distribution was actually in the mid-30s one of five agencies involved in welfare matters. In some cases, families requesting help had to provide details of their unfortunate circumstances to representatives of all five organizations. But nonetheless, Sechlinger lent his talents to reorganization and careful direction, and by 1940, the Poor and Hospital Commission had finally become solely a policy-making body that presided over a competent, well-trained staff. In 1940, Sechlinger was described as having met many griefs and problems, and that he could take 10 years of it without its embittering him is considered remarkable. And certainly, in conclusion, there had been many ups and downs, but Itasca County, with its Board of Poor and Hospital Commissioners, had pioneered a new approach to the granting of welfare relief. In the appropriate words of a 1940 analyst, the Poor and Hospital Commission has been a valuable experiment in social science in a rural county extending over a considerable period of time. The citizens of Itasca County can be proud of their record in extending a helping hand to the less fortunate among their numbers. And yes, Sechlinger certainly played a major role. So, made it through the Depression, and now time to move on and see what's going to happen as recovery in the 1940s begins.